is Hyperspace Theology, exploring what we can know about life and faith and God Almighty through a galaxy far, far away.
Welcome to Hyperspace Theology, a show in which we're exploring theology through a lens of a galaxy far, far away, from Jabba to Jonah, Darth to David, Boba to Boaz. The Star Wars galaxy is jam-packed with theological themes and characters, and we're going to crack them wide open. Hopefully this can be of help to you in your journey of faith, or hey, at the very least, could enhance your appreciation for the galaxy we all know and love. I'm your host, Jared Mays, and joining me once again this week is my friend and yours, Scott Howland. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. A little soggy, but we've had a lot of rain up here in New England, so outside of that, and you can't get the mowed lawn, so the lawn's getting pretty dull. But other than that, I'm doing
well. Yeah, mine too. It's crazy. Well, just today I went and ran an errand, came home at lunch. My wife was out trying to mow in the rain. I just was like, I got out of the car. I was like, let's just go eat lunch. Just thank you, but no. No reason. You know who else would never do something as foolish as mow in the rain is the doctor, Kevin Burr.
Gentlemen, it's good to see you guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's fun to be back together. I had to... You know, life comes up every now and then. Have to cancel an episode. Then I'm out of town, and it's good to be back together, isn't it?
Yes.
The thing about Zoom is, like, out of town isn't a good excuse. Other than the fact that, like, my microphone is here, and it's plugged into the what do you call this thing? With the, it's red. It
the thing
glows
with the
green
thing.
When I talk into it. Yeah.
Flux capacitor.
The flux capacitor. The hyperdrive. The compressor. Yeah.
So. Oh, man, you beat me to it. I was about to say compressor. Yeah. You just need to bypass the compressor and you'll be good.
So it's hard to record on the road, but good to be back together, back in the studio. And, you know, one of the things I was watching as I was traveling recently is the Disney Plus Star Wars Vintage Collection, something they added maybe back in the springtime. It's got the old Ewok movies from the 80s. It's got the Ewoks TV show. They just recently added the one and only season of Droids from like 84, 85. It's got a little Boba Fett cartoon from the holiday special. Not the whole holiday special, thank the Lord. It's bonkers. Some of this stuff is nuts. You guys ever watch this classic stuff? Scott, you got like the old school cred here. Have you ever watched any of the Disney Plus vintage stuff?
Before it was on Disney Plus, yes. I remember, I mean, you know, being a kid growing up, anytime they released anything for Star Wars, I watched it, good, bad, or indifferent. I actually don't remember too much of the holiday special until I rewatched it, a bootleg copy of it. But I remember watching all those Ewok adventures and in the Droids cartoon way back then. I haven't seen it recently. I didn't even know they put that stuff on to Disney Plus. Even though I'm on there a lot. We're doing a Marvel rewatch.
Oh, cool.
Right now, on top of
I'll say
else.
The one thing that's like worth your time would be the Tartakovsky Clone Wars series from the like early to mid 2000s. It's the same guy that made like Powerpuff Girls.
He did not do Powerpuff Girls.
No, did he not?
No, he did Dexter's Laboratory. And
all right, I'm Googling
Samurai
it.
Jack.
I think he did Powerpuff Girls. Did he not? Gotta love Googling things live on the show. How about you? While I Google this, Kevin, have you ever watched any of this crazy stuff?
I have seen some of the animated Clone Wars stuff. And I tried to start from the beginning. It starts really slow. I feel like it starts really slow. And I was waiting for it to get going. But no, I haven't seen some of the other stuff. Although I have seen the animated clip of Boba Fett when he
escaped the Sarlacc pit.
Does he help? He helps Luke.
Yeah.
Or is it he helps Luke?
And he rides a dinosaur and smacks it. He just loves to smack this thing with his big. He's got the same gun that they've repurposed in the Mandalorian, the big like forked the pulse blaster.
It looks like a giant tuning fork.
It is. Yeah. but what's amazing is he smacks it on his dinosaur just over and over and over, and it's so comical. Scott, you're right. You're right. I can't. I'm just going to edit it to make myself sound right. No. You're right. He did Samurai Jack, but not Powerpuff Girls. I'm going to have to apologize to Mr. Tartakovsky for accusing you of making Another excellent Cartoon Network show from the 90s.
I was going to say, I remember Powerpuff Girls being pretty well received.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's good. But that was wacky. You know what else is wacky? This episode of Hyperspace Theology. I mean, here we are talking about slapping dinosaurs and Powerpuff Girls, but we're going to get into one of the biggest, I think, richest topics where theology and Star Wars meet. This episode was chosen by Scott. Tell us what you have in mind for us this week, Scott.
Well, I had watched a non-Star Wars movie.
How dare you? No, episode's over.
Yeah, it's called Risen, and it's about the last days of Christ when he rises from the grave. So it is still connected to the show. And there's a Roman general who, at the end of it, has been, I'm putting quotation fingers, converted, because I don't think it actually shows us, but he helps all the disciples. He goes from leading the charge against the disciples of Christ to helping them escape after Jesus is risen. And you see him transform from one person to another, you know, spiritually speaking. And it got my mind thinking as to, you know, in both what he's thinking about actually seeing Jesus after he rose, and what the helping, doing this good deed to help the people, all the disciples escape. And it got me thinking about, you know, what it takes for redemption. What does that actually mean and stuff? And of course, that brings us to one of the bigger redemption arcs in all of fiction, probably popular culture, I should say, at least, is the redemption of Vader at the end of Return of the Jedi. And so that was kind of the kicking off point I had for this topic. And my hot take is, I don't think Vader should have been redeemed at the end of this. Mm. But that's my hot take for the moment.
You don't think Vader should have been
absolutely
redeemed?
Absolutely not. I could lay out my case now if you'd like, or I don't know if you guys have any opinions.
That is a hot take.
Oh, my goodness. Can we just... All right, before we get to that, let's talk about...
I have a hotter take for later in the episode. So.
All right, we'll get there. Let's first talk about
all these teasers out for us. He's ready.
Let's talk about the redemption of Vader and why it's so powerful first, before we get to whether or not it should have happened. Oh my goodness. Here he is talking about the most powerful arc in all of Star Wars and saying it shouldn't have happened. Killing me, Scott. Scott, I'll go. No, Kevin, I'll go to you. I'll go to you first. Why do you think the redemption of Anakin Skywalker is, and I like the way you said it a second ago, Scott, arguably the most famous redemption story in all of fiction? Do you think it is, and why is it?
I'm sorry. And
yes, Kevin first.
Okay. If, as one would argue, Vader was redeemed, then I would definitely agree that agree and affirm that I think it is the most profound redemption arc in all of. Definitely all of Western fiction, like modern fiction. Is that fair? You know, because I haven't read.
The only fiction I consume is pretty much Star Wars, so it's hard to know.
That's fair. Yeah. Scott raises a good point, because I honestly think that my thinking has shifted on this somewhat. In the world of Star Wars, it appears that Vader was sufficiently redeemed, given how things work in that world. In our world, Vader experiences what is roughly equivalent to a deathbed conversion. Now, he does have one extraordinarily powerful act in tearing down the overwhelming destructive force that he helped create and prop up for much of his adult life.
He rights his own wrong.
By killing the Emperor. But redemption, as it tends to work in our world, at least how I tend to think about it. Redemption is, it can be vision, like can be understood to be sort of a, like a one-time event, right? In religious terms, you can tend to think about it as salvation or justification. You have been transferred from a state of wrong or evil or wickedness into a state of goodness or you know, something along those lines.
Right standing.
Right standing, yeah. The question becomes, like, the process after that. And honestly, Vader doesn't have a ton of time. Anakin doesn't have a ton of time after that to do much more. But again, that's not to take away the significance of him killing the Emperor. So I think for the world of Star Wars, I think one can make a strong case that Vader is redeemed, but
it's complicated. It's tricky.
I don't think it's as cut and dried as maybe many of us have always thought about it. But that's my take.
It's one of the big complaints that people have against Return of the Jedi is it ties up the original trilogy with too neat of a bow at the end. Everything comes to too perfect of a conclusion. And one way to achieve that is have the villain who's redeemed have redemption by death as opposed to living redemption. Mm-hmm. So you don't see Vader atone for his own sins other than through sacrifice.
Yeah.
Now, that obviously has Christian overtones. It, in fact, I think is so overused in modern storytelling. Redemption by, you know, violent redemption, violent atonement, that I think it can undercut the power of the gospel, the power of Jesus' sacrifice. But we can get to that a little bit later because I want to talk about Kylo Ren, whether or not he should have died. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Not Kevin. I keep messing up y'all's names. You got both just these perfect white people, white guy names that just interchangeable. See if that stays in the episode. Scott, you said that this is arguably the most important, most powerful redemption story in all of Star Wars. Before you try to tear it down, why do you think that is?
I mean, it's the central thrust of 6 movies. So that's why you can see that virtually the entire life of Anakin / Vader in these movies. And then there's also subsequent, you know, comics and books and stuff like that fill in a lot of these gaps and stuff. But
TV shows.
But you see him progress and his fall, and then at the end, in the movie, he is redeemed. So you get to see that whole, you get to see the entire arc there. You know, his trying to do the right thing, and that leads to his fall, and then he's, you know, then he does the, quote, right thing again, and then he's saved. Or redeemed, or however it's framed within the Force in Star Wars and all that stuff. So that's why I say it's, you know, in pop culture, I would say it's probably the most prevalent of the redemption stories.
And I think that redemption story is complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, part of you saying it shouldn't have happened. I think that's complicated by the fact that we do see his fall. Mm-hmm. I have different feelings about the redemption of Anakin, you know, before having seen Revenge of the Sith than I do on the other side of it, which is we can't cut corners here. We have to be blunt about it. He killed the younglings. Master Skywalker. And it's over, man. I hate to break it to you, but...
There's a giant difference between if he had just let a bunch of guards in to do the dirty work, you know, letting them pass the temple security and stuff, and him actually doing it himself. And I mean, that's not his only evil act, but that's way, way up there. And
sure. So
I'll say, and go ahead. He's part of it. What seems, I'm going to put him killing the emperor seems a little bit hollow, is he was planning on doing that in Empire. He's like,
right. Yeah, he was going to do it for personal gain.
That was his plan all along. That's the Sith plan. That's you come, you're an apprentice, and then when you get strong enough, you take over your take over the master role. That's what Darth Revan had. It's Darth Revan, right? That set up the rule of two. And that's what he had set up.
Bane sets up the rule of two, but Revan is redeemed. Revan has his own redemption narrative.
But the whole Sith process was set up to so they wouldn't stop, so they'd stop fighting amongst themselves and everything, hopefully, to set up to make the ultimate Sith. And so he was just fulfilling a lot of what he had done earlier. And from my perspective, when you see, he's never shown to show any remorse for anything he's ever done. Even when he saves Luke, and a lot of it is also the fact that he has that death right there. He doesn't have time to express a lot more things. So maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, I don't know. But he doesn't show any remorse. He doesn't show any remorse for destroying an entire planet. You know, billions and billions of lives. He just has a strong hand in wiping out. And, you know, so he doesn't show any remorse for any of that stuff. So that's why...
So your argument is not that he had sinned too greatly in order to be redeemable. It's part of it. Okay, so we'll get there. Your argument, I think, that holds more weight for me is that he did not show remorse. Right. He was not truly repentant. Yeah. He was already going to kill the emperor for personal gain, but then ended up killing the emperor for a different reason in the end. I wanted to talk from a Christian standpoint, and we'll come back to Star Wars. Is there a sin that's too great from which a person can be redeemed? This is where I'm kind of feeling some tension with your argument, Scott. Obviously, in Star Wars, you know, we're not talking about the biblical rules right. by which a person can or cannot be redeemed.
It's an entirely different set of standards in Star Wars, and you know, it's also a work of fiction. It's a work of fiction, so. They take a lot of liberties with that kind of stuff. It's a tough thing to say if it's just an act, any kind of act. I think you have to, the way I reconcile a lot of these things, you have to show some sort of remorse or you know, I can't think of, there's a word that's right on the top of my tongue and I can't think of it. Like regret for your actions. You know, you have to show or show that at least, you know,
contrition.
Thank you. And you have to have some kind of contrition for what you have done in the past. Acknowledge what you've done is wrong. That type of thing. I think that needs to be a component of this.
What do you think, Kevin?
The word that Scott was looking for was apparently contrition. Before Jared, you mentioned that, I was thinking of the term penance, not in the way that particular term is used in, say, a Catholic context. That's not how I mean it, but I mean more generally one's acts of righting the wrongs that they committed prior to some conversion or, you know, salvation experience or something along those lines. Vader doesn't have the opportunity to really engage in a lot of repentant acts. He simply doesn't have time. And from a storytelling standpoint, it's more dramatic. It makes for a better climactic ending, right, to have your redeemed person suddenly redeemed in an act of sacrificial death. I mean, yeah, that's kind of exciting. But I think you can show, and I think it's more powerful from a character standpoint, from a certain point of view. I think it's more powerful from a character standpoint to have, for example, an excellent animated TV series is Avatar: The Last Airbender. And you know, for those who are familiar with the series, one of the main villains, a guy by the name of Prince Zuko, voiced by the guy who played Rufio in Hook with with Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman, old Steven Spielberg film. Zuko is a bad guy, and he tries to become good and then turns back. And then at the end of season two, beginning of season three, like somewhere in there, he realizes, on into season three, he realizes, oh, okay, no, I should have switched sides earlier. And then he actually begins the process of trying to right the wrongs that he had committed earlier. And his character arc is just phenomenal.
That show is fantastic.
It's great.
If you hadn't seen it, hasn't seen it. Fantastic. It's one of the better animated shows out there. It is. Don't watch the movie. Do not watch the movie. That is horrible.
Yeah. The live action movie that came out, 15 plus years ago or so, M. Night Shyamalan. he was trying to do his own thing. Disregard that. I'll admit also, this is just the issue with TV shows versus movies. If you can have a really high quality TV show and sustain it over a while, you get excellent character. You get room for character development. We see, Anakin's fall to the dark side. When you watch Attack of the Clones, the animated Clone Wars, and Revenge of the Sith, when you watch all those in order as like how they kind of should be chronologically in the story, in the world of Star Wars, it really makes sense. You really see, man, goodness, Anakin time and again was let down by the council and all this other stuff. And the sort of odd, a relationship that he built with Tarkin, there when they were trying to bust these guys out of the prison in that one Clone Wars episode. Anyway, Zuko from Avatar: The Last Airbender had time to do penance. Basically, he had time to do repentive acts, and Vader had time maybe to do one. If we grant Vader the most charitable interpretation of his killing the Emperor, to save his son due to his love for his son, Vader had time to do one. It would not have, from a storytelling standpoint, it maybe would not have been as exciting a climax to show Vader go through and start dismantling the Empire. Although that could have been kind of neat. To see him do that, with a blue lightsaber in hand rather than a red one.
Well, there is a an alternate universe story, Star Wars Visions, I think it was called. It's like a what if story from the early 90s that explored that. It was White Knight Vader. It looked like he was in a white tux, like he was ready for prom.
Yes.
But so instead of the white armor or the black armor, it's white armor, and so he is not killed. Luke is. And so instead, he has to go and try to restart the Jedi Order. And so that's an interesting alternate take. But you make a good point, right? He didn't have the time. He didn't have the time to redeem himself. And I think that this is where it gets complicated, especially from a Christian standpoint, is there is no amount of good deeds that a person can do that will outweigh their bad ones. That's not the way that salvation works in the Christian schema, right? Instead, we think about the fact that a single sin separates us from God. The holiness of God can't withstand sin. Instead, we need a way to be absolved of our sins, and the only way to do that, of course, is by the ultimate sacrifice. And this, of course, gets tricky, especially when we start thinking about how that one good deed, Jesus dying to save us of our sins, outweighs a multitude of sins. You name it. There's nothing. We could debate exactly, is there an unforgivable sin biblically? But for the sake of our discussion tonight, we'll say that there in a nutshell, is no sin that's too great that Jesus cannot save, right? There's no sin that his sacrifice cannot absolve. And this actually gets to some complicated, kind of tricky, murky territory for us ethically. In fact, Scott, have you ever heard the story of the redemption of Jeffrey Dahmer?
No, I haven't heard that. I obviously I know who Jeffrey Dahmer is, but I've never heard about him.
Yeah,
him,
yeah.
Being redeemed or anything like that. So it's go on.
Do you know this one, Kevin?
I have.
And oh, it's a legend in churches of Christ.
I know a preacher who is connected with that story.
Oh, do you? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, yeah. Scott, you've been in churches of Christ, what, 5 years? This is one of our biggest claims to fame. Is that it was a Church of Christ preacher who, in doing prison ministry, reached Jeffrey Dahmer, baptized him in 1994. It was a full, you know, in studying the Bible, came convicted of his sin, wanted salvation. You know, the legend goes, Kevin might have more on this than I have. And then 8 months before, was bludgeoned to death in the prison for the unspeakable, atrocious acts that he committed. And we think about the, 17 people he killed, and he wouldn't just kill them. He would sexually abuse their corpses. He would cut off their heads. I mean, the most unspeakable acts you could possibly imagine. And this person was converted, was converted 8 months before his death. We, of course, at the preacher training camp that I do, we do Jonah once every, 4 years. And so every time we do Jonah, there's always a student who preaches the story of Jeffrey Dahmer and how, imagine if God told you to go and preach to Jeffrey Dahmer, could you do it? Would you do it? And of course, the analog there is that that's what God is calling Jonah to do, to go and speak to his enemies, Israel's enemies, and he doesn't want to do it. That story, of course, when is preached, there's always somebody, when that kid goes back to their home church, who's like, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if he baptized him or not. It's too far gone. No way to save Jeffrey Dahmer. But from the Christian standpoint, theoretically, it's possible. Did I about get it right, Kevin?
Based on what I know, yeah. At the time when I first heard a preacher talk about that particular process of his connection to reaching out to Jeffrey Dahmer, I didn't know who Jeffrey Dahmer was.
Yeah. You know, oh.
And I think I was in college. Yeah. I just didn't know. You know, blissfully ignorant, I guess. Yeah. As far as I can tell, what I remember, I think that's pretty accurate.
It doesn't excuse a person's sin to know Jesus, to be repentant, to be baptized into Christ. There's no way to bring those people back from the dead. Nevertheless, we have to understand the forgiveness that's possible in Jesus as being greater than simply self-atonement, right? Atoning for one's sins mm-hmm. through good deeds. And trying to level the scales. And I think that's what's so powerful about redemption from a Christian perspective is we look at Vader and we say there's no way to come back from killing children. And I think you've got a great point, Scott. That's what's so incredibly transformative about the gospel is that there is no crime that's too great from which a person can come back. I'm struggling with the sentence construction on that. No sin is too great. No sin is too great. Right. Now, did you want to add anything else to the point that that you don't think Vader was redeemable? Do you think we covered that? You said you had another big point
for us.
He's
got a hotter
take. Another hot take.
Well, my hotter take is I think that the redemption arc of Kylo Ren is a better redemption arc. That's my hotter take.
Okay. Oof. I disagree vehemently. Let's go there. Let's go there. All right. I think the redemption of Vader in Return of the Jedi, and I would say it has less to do with Vader and more to do with Luke. Luke's story in sacrificing himself because he believes in the good in his father is the most powerful story that I have ever consumed, probably ever will consume. It drives my life and ministry and attitude to believe in people, to believe in the good in people. To put yourself in harm's way, throw away the lightsaber, don't choose the violent solution, and to risk everything in order to save those you believe in. All right, that is central to my scheme of life.
I completely agree with everything there. I think that part, that side of the story, I think is very powerful, and I think you can learn a lot from that, from being able from the preacher who wants to reach out to Jeffrey Dahmer, that nobody is beyond saving, and it's very I mean this sincerely, a very noble cause, a very worthy endeavor. So I that part of the story, I don't want to short that part of the story with the Vader.
Okay, we'll keep you on the podcast. I won't cut off your audio. I won't edit you out of the episode. That's good. That's good. All right, we can be in agreement on that. I do think that we've got some common ground on realizing that there is no way that Vader can go back and right the wrongs of killing younglings. I will say, however, that was not original to Return of the Jedi.
That's the part that really gets me the most, is that, and this isn't a sequel trilogy issue where another group of people came in and wrote these stories. This was Lucas himself.
Yeah.
He's the one who conceived of this, okay, Vader gets redeemed at the end, and then he puts him through these things, which I think, like I said, if it had been, even if it had been something as simple as he lets guards into, or people loyal to Palpatine into the temple, bypassing the security measures, and they handle it.
He gives them the garage door opener.
Exactly. Even if it's something like that, it shows that he's not, he might be complicit in it, but he's not the active participant versus the active participant that he is shown to be. So that's always the hang up I have with that kind of stuff.
That's your hang up. But then let's get to Kylo Ren. You think that his redemption story is better than Anakin's? First of all,
I think
why?
It's his. He isn't shown to be as, I'm gonna say, pure evil as Vader is shown at times. Because there are stories of Vader being just evil, and ruthless, and there's times when you see, when Kylo Ren can be that ruthless, but there's times even when you look at him in the Last Jedi, where he's trying to get Rey to his side, not to be, so that they can take so that they can mold it in their own eyes instead of someone else's vision, and then. Towards the end, and I think this is a case of the story is told where he has more to do after he does his redeeming act of saving Rey. He has a little more to do, and you see him talk to his father there, having almost the same the conversation he has with his father.
Oh yeah, word for word
that he has in The Force Awakens, where he's like, I know what I need to do, but I don't know if I have the strength to do it. I think that shows more of an act being worthy of being redeemed, because you see him emote the contrition, and including having the act of saving people.
I think that Kylo Ren's story and particularly Adam Driver's acting is the strongest element of the sequel trilogy. I'll give it that much. I'm not willing to quite get as far as you are, though. Let's let Kevin weigh in on this one. Who's got the better redemption arc, Anakin or Ben?
Anakin's definitely has the power of nostalgia.
Sure.
Which has its own merits that can probably be discussed at another time. I do think Scott makes a strong case that, again, in the world of Star Wars, right, where there is not a Jesus Christ figure through whom one can be redeemed in some sort of eschatological sense, like Christians hold that Jesus offers for humanity today. in the world of Star Wars, then righting the wrongs that you committed, like actually doing the things, righting the wrongs that you committed, is essential. And Kylo gets to, Kylo has more time, right? How much time passes from the Death Star wreckage to Exegol? Like, how much time in the story?
Yeah, I think it's nebulous. Long enough for him to fly there.
Right, yeah, okay. So, what feels like, you know,
could be a day, could be 2 weeks.
Yeah, like, who knows, right? But anyway, like, he has, he simply has a little bit more time to actually effect, to put into practice his repentance than Vader does. And he is, it's, Scott makes an interesting point. I don't know that I'm willing to jump on that bandwagon just yet.
I told you it was a hot take.
All right, here's my counterpoint.
Yeah.
Here's my counterpoint. I don't know that I agree as much as some people on the internet who are very vehement that Ben Solo should have had a living redemption story, that his death doesn't make a ton of sense. The back and forth, you're dying, I'll save you, now I'm dying thing is a little bit goofy. I agree there. Some people really wanted to see him and Rey, you know, marry, and it concludes happily ever after. I'm not sure that I wanted that either. It feels a little bit undercutting to both Vader and, most importantly, Jesus to just have another redemption by death. That grinds my gears from a storytelling perspective.
I will agree with that part of it. I don't think.
Okay.
That Kylo should have died at the end. I don't think that was the best. I'm just speaking that up until that point, he has shown, you see more of some kind of contrition. That's the only word I can think of. Now it's the only word I can think of towards some of his actions and what he needs to do to help out. I don't necessarily think he should have died at the end. I think it was a bit of a cop-out to have him die at the end.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
He felt torn between the light and dark. That's very evident. There's actually a really good comic series that shows his fall to the dark side. It's only 4 issues long. Definitely worth the read, by Charles Soule. It's called The Rise of Kylo Ren. And the author pitched it as From Ben to Ren. And so it shows that fall to the dark side. It ends with him cracking his own lightsaber crystal and making it bleed and turn red. It, excellent, absolutely excellent, recommended homework if you want something in Star Wars outside of this episode. So you see this kind of tug between the light and the dark that he has. But I would argue that in the end of The Rise of Skywalker, what is motivating him more than wanting to be good or reverse his wrongs is his love for Rey. And so he wants to go and save Rey or to help her in her journey, which isn't all that different from Vader having love for his son. That's more powerful than his own remorse for his sins.
Can I ask a question here?
Sense of love. Sure.
Sorry to interrupt.
No. I was winding down.
What do you think in the world of Star Wars, does love for son, love that a son has for a father, is it more powerful or more pure than romantic love that Kylo Ren expressed for Rey?
Ooh.
Is there one that is better or more powerful? By way of context,
I was trying to say that they're similar.
Yeah. But I just, like, from a storytelling standpoint, I kind of feel like the love that a son has for a father has a greater depth of purity to it than a romantic love between...
Sure. It's certainly more unique.
It is, yeah. You can take another example, too, and I'm kind of giving y'all time to... I'm stalling to give y'all time to think if you want to reflect on it openly. You can take something like Harry Potter, spoiler alert, for those who have not read or seen any of the movies. It was a mother's...
Hear me?
It was a mother's love for a son, a self-sacrificial love that ended up kicking off the whole thing, in a sense.
Yeah, it's not a spoiler. It happens in the first 5 minutes.
Right, because the killing curse rebounded.
Right.
And And that love has a purity to it that I think is maybe stronger than a romantic love. That's not to downplay romantic love. I mean, I'm happily married, but
sure.
I don't know what do you think there, yeah, Jared?
I don't know that I want to apply Harry Potter rules as carrying any kind of value in my Star Wars and theology podcast. I don't know that
I
matters.
I offer that
to,
simply by way
me.
Of by way of analogy.
Yeah, I'll let Scott weigh in on this. I was going to say that there's that element of their stories are similar. They're both motivated, I think, more by a love for another person than they are by remorse for their sins. And Scott was giving that as a prerequisite for appropriate, fulfilling, satisfying redemption.
It's tough to say if that trumps the love of what it starts out as a complete stranger. You know, it's tough to say what, you know, some people say that bond is stronger, but I've seen in practice that it's not, that there are family members who don't have anything like that, you know, love from a parent or from a child or something like something had happened that might break that bond. So, you know, I'd like to think that is the strongest bond you could possibly have, but I've seen cases where it hasn't been firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. You've got a vested interest in your own children. They're your spawn. You can have narcissistic love for your own children. I love myself and I see myself in them. Whereas falling in love with a stranger could be, all right, you're making a good point, Scott. I like that. Now, one of the things that I've been wanting to bring up this episode, maybe it's just semantics, but I think it's deeper than that. And that is, well, honestly, I want to argue with our entire premise for the episode. Maybe it's too late to do that. I want to bicker with the meaning of the word redemption as we're using it. I think that a better word would be more appropriate for what we're describing. And that is, I'm not sure what it is, so you can help me. to talk about a person having moved from a state of evil, of villainy, to becoming, you know, viewed as a hero. Obviously, in Star Wars, that means, well, they get to have some sort of eternal life in the Force. They get to become a blue glowy and hang out with Yoda and Obi-Wan. In Christianity, we're talking about, you know, eternal salvation, mm-hmm. in the presence of God in heaven. I think that the word redemption means something slightly different. Now,
different
evolution
from
of
what
language.
We've been describing.
Yes. Evolution of language, Kevin, you teach Greek. You deal with the fact that a word can mean something in one century, and a couple hundred years later, it can have a different nuance of meaning. Mm-hmm. Is that safe to say?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what's a good example? Maybe gay in English. It wasn't all that long ago. Less than 100 years, gay meant something quite different than it means now.
Christmas song, Don We Now Our Gay Apparel, had nothing to do
That's
with...
right, yeah.
Had nothing to do with sexual preference.
Got... I am... arguing that the word redemption has a greater meaning than simply moving from a state of villainy to a state of heroism or to be worthy of afterlife, positive afterlife. Words can have a drastic change in their nuance of meaning, and they can have multiple definitions as well. So I think the word redemption has come to mean what we've been using... Well, we've been describing this whole episode, so I don't want to say that this has been wrong. And I do think it's more than semantics, though, and that's this. I think redemption specifically, how it differs from salvation, for example, is that in order to be redeemed, you're saved through some kind of a transaction. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Bought with a price. So if I have a coupon... You say coupon or coupon, Scott? What do we say in New England?
Coupon.
A voucher. And you take it down to Market Basket, and you want to get, you know, whatever it is you're trying to buy, you would do what with that coupon?
You would redeem it.
That's right. So you have the appropriate item with which you can pay for what you are trying to bring home.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the redemption has more to do with salvation that's bought with a price. So Vader is redeemed by Luke. Luke sacrificed himself in order to save Vader. Luke ended up surviving the encounter. Vader did not. So in a way, it's self-sacrifice. Rey sacrifices herself in order to save Kylo. Kylo sacrifices herself in order to save Rey. It's kind of like redemption ping pong.
I always thought that was a bit... I also thought that was goofy, too, so...
Yeah. And so I think that redemption specifically, as a word, I would like to advocate that we return kind of to this older meaning for the word, which is salvation that's bought with a price. I think that in Christian theology, that's an important distinction to make, because we have words for salvation. We have words for, what, being justified, being made right with God, or being, you know, cancel culture here, being made right in the eyes of society. And so in Star Wars, there's, especially in the expanded universe, I've got to go there, every episode, got to go there. Especially in the recent canon books and comics, there's a consensus that the galaxy does not accept the redemption of Vader. They do not forgive Anakin for what he did. Luke, however, does. Leia struggles with it more than Luke does. The society doesn't forgive him, but in the eyes of the Force, Anakin gets to have that afterlife. He's a blue glowy hanging out with Yoda. The fact of the matter is, in the eyes of the cosmic Force, right, he's redeemed because of the fact that he sacrificed himself for his son. All right, Kevin, I saw you reaching for, I'm going to assume, was a Bible dictionary back there. Am I right? Does it give any kind of nuance of meaning for the word redemption? Or is this just a wasted rabbit hole?
No, you're right. One of the ways that some of the words that typically get used that end up being translated redeemed or having some kind of English synonym often mean... often had a very, very mundane in the sense of earthly and temporal, had a very mundane meaning where a slave, an enslaved person, was redeemed and given their freedom in the sense that basically, okay. Because keep in mind, we're dealing with humans, but in the mindset of really the ancient world. An enslaved person didn't have the same rights as a free person, or especially anybody in the aristocracy. They were property, and so when you bought their freedom, it was a financial exchange in order to secure the freedom for this person. There had to be some kind of exchange.
Yeah, so you sacrifice money, in order to give them their freedom.
Yeah. Now there is a fascinating kind of practice in the ancient Greek and Roman world called sacred manumission, where somebody could work through a temple and it basically arrange to purchase the freedom for an enslaved person in the name of a particular god or goddess. And so it's like, the god Apollo has redeemed this enslaved person, and now they experience their freedom. That idea is absolutely linked to what we see Jesus doing, what we see Jesus offering in the Gospels.
Yeah.
And what Paul and I talk about later on. Yeah.
I love it when Kevin puts on his professor hat. Well, Scott, regardless if this is just semantics, my point is this. You made an argument that Vader's redemption is less than worthy. and my point is that it is hard, of course, to ever view killing children ever being redeemable. It's hard to believe that killing and murdering, raping and cutting off heads like Jeffrey Dahmer, that could ever be, he could ever be salvific, right? My point is that's exactly right. We should not be able to believe that a person could be redeemed after they've gone down the dark path. In Christian theology, more importantly than Star Wars, it's all a fictional narrative. It doesn't especially matter. And that's the gospel. Jesus' sacrifice is that exchange that pays such a great price that it can redeem any sin. And it should be ridiculous. That's the point. It should be unfathomable. our record of debt is so great. All right, I'm going to start preaching. I don't want to do that. Now, in the world of Star Wars, let's go Star Wars and then the Bible.
Okay.
I want to think about other instances where we've got powerful redemption stories. Obviously, we've talked about two. We've contested whose was greater. We've, of course, bridged that to Jesus and saying, well, yeah, maybe those were, in the eyes of some, cheap redemption stories. Therefore, we get to Jesus. It's not cheap. It's costly. It's expensive. That's the point. He gave his life. However, in the world of Star Wars, there are other redemption stories beyond just the, you know, two of the big bad villains in Vader and Kylo Ren. I want to advocate for a few. I'm going to give you guys a chance to think on this one before I toss it to you. I want to pitch my very favorite Star Wars story that is ever written, and that is Dark Empire from 1991. It is just rife with redemption stories because the author, Tom Veitch, was a Benedictine monk. And so he actually was really obsessed with this light and dark back and forth kind of dualism, in which we've got Luke falling to the dark side, but it's, you know, it's debatable. Did he actually fall to the dark side? Because he did it in order to infiltrate the dark side to learn Palpatine's secrets. It's convoluted and crazy, and I love it. Yeah, exactly, yeah. But in there, Leia goes to redeem Luke. She puts herself in harm's way in order to try to bring her brother back. We also have an ancient Jedi named Vima Deboda, who had been basically an AWOL Jedi during the Clone Wars, right? She abandoned the Jedi during the Jedi Purge. She quit. She gave up on her fellow Jedi. She did not continue the fight. She just hid and abandoned the Jedi way. And I'm trying to remember exactly what happened in her story. Did she actually contribute to the death of some other Jedi? I think so. But then eventually sacrifices herself to save Leia's unborn children. Spoiler alert. Sorry about that. All right. It's an excellent, excellent story. I also love, as was mentioned earlier in the episode, the story of Darth Revan, who eventually, it's debatable, depending on how you play the Knights of the Republic video game from 2004, did he turn good? Did he turn bad? Well, you know, did he go back to the dark side even after having been redeemed once? Speaking of redemption ping pong, that's a great story as well. And then finally, I want to advocate for the story of Mara Jade, who was basically the Emperor's right-hand woman, helping perform secret agent dark side acts during the reign of the Emperor, and then is discovered by Luke Skywalker. He kind of falls in love with her. They have a thing, and there's a clone. It's crazy. All right. Where else in Star Wars do we find powerful redemption stories, guys?
I think you start seeing, maybe not completed stories, but you start seeing the stories in The Mandalorian.
Okay.
The Mandalorian himself, while not changing his ways drastically, you can see him thinking more about going from bounty to bounty and just existing to serving this child that he needs to get from point A to point B, and even starting to try and be a father to the child when he's telling him not to eat those eggs in the passenger. And you know, you see that. And then also, I think you see... I can't think of his name now. Bill Burr's character
it's just Bill Burr. That's his name.
Yeah, I can't think of his name right now. But you see his character, who's also just floating, just trying to, you know, survive, do whatever he takes, and then he picks a side, and as quickly to come to help. You know, and several people along the way on the Mandalorian's journey are quick to just jump in and help, say, try and get this child, to protect the child, or retrieve the child from when Moff Gideon actually takes him back, captures him and stuff. You know, I think there's, you know, a lot of people there going against their own self-interests.
Yeah,
and
yeah, that's
and
a great
trying
story.
So I think, especially in the second season, there's a lot more of those. They're not completed arcs, of course. They're not, you know, but you can see a pathway for them to be saved, if you will.
Sure. There's even an episode called The Sin and another one called Redemption. I mean, it's right there in the episode titles. Yep. You got any, Kevin?
I can think of one. I don't know that it will count very much as a full redemption arc, because there wasn't there wasn't much time for him to actually fall to any kind of evil. But Rex, Captain Rex, for a moment in the Clone Wars last season, he fights it for a moment, but falls to Order 66.
Yeah.
And what is fascinating is if you look at Ahsoka, she is in a she serves a role that is very much like the God of the Bible who pursues and redeems that which is beloved and lost.
Yeah, we could do like a whole hyperspace theology episode about Ahsoka. That would be fun.
Oh man, be great. That'd be great. And her story's still being written too. So
sure.
But yeah, like now, like Captain Rex, like he could have, you know, she could have left him, right? Ahsoka could have left Rex, but she didn't. Rex needed something outside of himself in order to be redeemed. Yeah. And that has very strong Christian undertones or overtones, however you want to think about it.
Absolutely. All right, I gave some from the expanded universe a little bit, you know, inside baseball. I'm going to give one that's much more accessible, and that is the story of Lando Calrissian. Lando, who betrays his best friend, a close friend. It's arguable that Lobot is his best friend in Empire. I don't know exactly what's going on there. Betrays him, but then makes it right. Right, goes to save him in Return of the Jedi. Absolutely love me some Billy Dee Williams original trilogy Lando. Now, there's one other in the Bible I want to make sure that we get to, a very important redemption story, especially following the lines that we've talked about in this episode of trying to right one's own wrongs. And I'm sure everybody can pick up where I'm going here, and that's the story of Saul of Tarsus. Saul, who was a persecutor of Christians, and then after his encounter along the road to Damascus, had a change of heart, but not just a change of heart, a change of lifestyle as well, and went to save Christians, right? He went to go and proclaim the gospel to make more Christians, and one of the great evangelists of the first century, Saul of Tarsus, who became Paul, right? Paul, the great missionary. Any other great redemption stories outside of Jesus and Saul, you know, the two big ones?
I definitely think of Zacchaeus.
Oh, good.
Yeah, there in Luke 19, Gospel of Luke chapter 19, Zacchaeus admits, or at least it appears he is willing to right wrongs that he may have committed. There's, you know, some debate about, you know, whether Zacchaeus has apologized or like exactly how to understand that story. But the bottom line is, if we take Zacchaeus at his word, and I think Luke presents him as a reliable source, we should take Zacchaeus at his word, then Zacchaeus has, offered to atone for the things that he's done.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Like this is now we're operating within a sort of a Christian system, and it's still important for Zacchaeus to do things that indicate his repentance. Is repentance that leads to redemption? I mean, yeah, I think that's how Luke kind of presents that story there.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good one. That wasn't even on my radar. Now, how about you, Scott?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Maybe some of the soldiers that there were at the end who converted to Christianity after, you know, the Roman soldiers. I can't pull any names right now.
There's little nuggets of information about that sprinkled throughout the New Testament, who might have been involved. I think about Nicodemus. He's mentioned three times in the Gospel of John. He goes from being kind of a straight-laced Pharisee who has these questions about Jesus and comes to him under the cover of darkness, but then is helping honor Jesus at his burial at the end of the Gospel. So there's a good one there. Of course, Scott, you know, you're leading us to the centurion at the cross, who is complicit in the death of Jesus, who in Mark 15 is the first human in the Gospel of Mark who says this is the Son of God, to call Jesus the Son of God. And so I think one of the best stories in all the Bible is that centurion who sees Jesus crucified. The way that Jesus dies leads him to conclude, surely this man was the Son of God. All right, I've got one more from the Old Testament. One, I can't pass on this one. I'm fixated on this story right now. One of the worst kings, if not the worst, in all the Old Testament was Manasseh. I had a long conversation with my friend Jordan Guy about this last week, a Chronicles scholar, and was like, what do you think about Manasseh? Because in Kings, you learn about all of his wickedness, his horrible deeds, even killing his own children, sacrificing his children to a false god. I mean, we're talking about Jeffrey Dahmer-level king villainy here in the Old Testament. But then in Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 33, we learn, it's not in Kings, only in Chronicles, it tells us that Manasseh repented, was redeemed, and that his life was not simply the summation of his wickedness. And I was like, what do you think, historically? What's going on there? Did it happen? Did it not happen? What's the deal with Manasseh? And I don't remember his answer, so you'll have to go and ask him, man. Everybody. And I think for people, that story is shocking, much like Jeffrey Dahmer, because people don't know the story. They only know of Manasseh's wickedness, I think, because maybe a lot of people fall off their Bible reading before they get to 2 Chronicles 33. We'll put it that way. Scott, did you know that according to Chronicles, Manasseh was redeemed? Yeah, here's the point. This is one of the greatest redemption stories in the Bible, and it's tragically underpreached. All right, I know what I'm preaching Sunday. Thanks for helping me write my sermon, guys. Well, it's been a lot of fun. I have really enjoyed this episode. It's got me excited about both Star Wars and the Bible, which is exactly what I hope it has done for all of our listeners. If you're listening to this and you've got questions, you're like, how could Jeffrey Dahmer be redeemed? What's up with that? Hey, send us an email. You can get in touch with us, hyperspacetheology@gmail.com. Or, of course, you can find us on Instagram at hyperspace_theology. And hey, we'll get even on even more platforms before too long, coming your way soon. Before we close out the episode, Kevin, why don't you tell the good folks what is going on with your other project, Faith in the Folds?
Yeah, thanks, Jared. So at the time of recording this episode, I am about to release the second part of an interview that I had with Dr. Dale Manor. Dr. Manor from Harding University is professor emeritus of Old Testament and archaeology at Harding University, where Jared and I went for undergrad. He's a legitimate field archaeologist, has worked with a couple of professors from Tel Aviv University at a site in Israel called Tel Bet Shemesh. I talked to him a little bit about sort of archaeology and kind of what archaeology can tell us about the Bible. In the second part, which is going to debut here in a few days, I asked him, what's one thing that he would want every Christian to know about the Old Testament? Cool. Because, Old Testament doesn't get a good rap a lot of the time. Upcoming interviews on Faith in the Folds include one with our very own Jared Mays. So that one will debut in, hopefully... I think somewhere around late July, early August, and I've got a couple more interesting ones that I'm working on. I've got another one on the Book of Revelation and how it's understood in an African context. I've got one with Revelation scholar Dr. Garrett Best, and one with visiting professor of missions at Harding University, Alan Howell, a guy who spent several years in Mozambique doing mission work. So that should be fun too.
Awesome. I saw Dr. Manor the other day on Harding's campus with a huge smile on his face, holding what I think was like an animal skin, like wine skin, like holding a dead animal in his hands that's a piece of, Old Testament archaeological history. He was like running through the, the Bible building going to show this to somebody, and it was just classic. It was amazing. He was that's in great. His element. And we've been in ours tonight. It's been a lot of fun. Listeners, we would like to hear from you. If you've been paying attention, following along with us, going on this journey as we're getting this show started, we'd like to hear from you. We have always wanted to pick other people's brains just besides the three of ourselves. We've got some guests lined up in the near future as well. But here's some questions you could pitch to us. What's a topic in the Bible you'd like to hear explored. You could ask us something that you'd like for us to cover. You could talk about, just nail my microphone there. What's something in the Bible that doesn't add up for you? Something you struggle with in your faith and want to hear us explore and use Star Wars to do so. You could ask us, you know, what's the most... you could give us the answer to what you think is the most impactful spiritual allegory in Star Wars, in your opinion. Or, hey, who's got the best redemption story in Star Wars? Is Scott right that it's Kylo Ren? Or, you know, is he going out on a sequel trilogy limb? I think we need some time for that one to age, Scott. I think we need, like, another 30 years.
Can I make it perfectly clear? I am not saying Rise of Skywalker is better than Return of the Jedi. Not in any way, shape, or form.
But the Kylo's story. Yeah, we get it.
I'm not making that hot of a take.
That's a scorching take.
That's not my point here. Is that one nuanced, part of the movie is what I was getting at.
Yeah, I'm going to edit that part out so nobody will hear it. No. Good point. You made a good point. Well, everybody, if you want to chime in with a question or a comment, of course, we'd like to give you an episode to be in the pilot seat, and you can pull the lever to blast us to hyperspace. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. In the meantime, God bless, and may the Force be with you.